When we got to my car hours later, I asked him what was the thing I had seen. He shook his head imperatively and we drove in complete silence. He went directly inside when we arrived at his house in the early morning, and he again hushed me up when I tried to talk. Don Juan was sitting outside behind his house. He seemed to have been waiting for me to wake up, because he started talking as I came out of the house. He said that the shadow I had seen the night before was a spirit, a force that belonged to the particular place where I had seen it. He spoke of that specific being as a useless one. "It only exists there," he said. "It has no secrets of power, so there was no point in remaining there. You would have seen only a fast, passing shadow going back and forth all night." 2 days later, on December 17, 1969, Don Juan said in a very casual tone that I knew all the details and necessary techniques in order to go to the hills by myself. He urged me to proceed alone and affirmed that his company would only hinder me. I was ready to leave when he seemed to change his mind. "You're not strong enough," he said. "I'll go with you to the bottom of the hills." When we were at the small valley where I had seen the ally, he examined from a distance the formation in the terrain that I had called a hole in the hills, and said that we had to go still further south into the distant mountains. It was late afternoon when we stopped. We sat down on some rocks. I was tired and hungry. All I had eaten during the day was some tortillas and water. Don Juan stood up all of a sudden, looked at the sky, and told me in a commanding tone to take off in the direction that was the best for me, and to be sure I could remember the spot where we were at the moment, so I could return there whenever I was through. He said in a reassuring tone that he would be waiting for me if it took forever. I walked away toward the southeast, turning around a couple of times to look at Don Juan. He was walking very slowly in the opposite direction. I climbed to the top of a large hill and looked at Don Juan once again. He was a good 200 yards away. He did not turn to look at me. I ran downhill into a small bowl-like depression between the hills, and I suddenly found myself alone. I sat down for a moment and began to wonder what I was doing there. I felt ludicrous looking for a spirit catcher. I ran back up to the top of the hill to have a better view of Don Juan, but I could not see him anywhere. I ran downhill in the direction I had last seen him. I wanted to call off the whole affair and go home. I felt quite stupid and tired. "Don Juan," I yelled over and over. He was nowhere in sight. I again ran to the top of another steep hill. I could not see him from there either. I ran quite a way looking for him, but he had disappeared. I retraced my steps and went back to the original place where he had left me. I had the absurd certainty I was going to find him sitting there laughing at my inconsistencies. "What in the hell have I gotten into?" I said loudly. I knew then that there was no way to stop whatever I was doing there. I really did not know how to go back to my car. Don Juan had said that I always insisted on starting at a point I called the beginning, when in effect the beginning did not exist. And there, in the middle of those mountains, I felt I understood what he meant. It was as if the point of departure had always been myself. It was as if Don Juan had never really been there. And when I looked for him, he became what he really was, a fleeting image that vanished over a hill. I heard the soft rustle of leaves, and a strange fragrance enveloped me. I felt the wind as a pressure on my ears, like a shy buzzing. The sun was about to reach some compact clouds over the horizon that looked like a solidly tinted orange band when it disappeared behind a heavy blanket of lower clouds. It appeared again a moment later like a crimson ball floating in the mist. I lay down on my back. The world around me was so still, so serene, and at the same time so alien I felt overwhelmed. I did not want to weep, but tears rolled down easily. I remained in that position for hours. Finally, it got fairly dark. I felt better. In fact, I felt almost happy. For me, the semi-darkness was much more nurturing and protective than the hard daylight. I stood up, climbed to the top of a small hill, and began repeating the motions Don Juan had taught me. I ran toward the east 7 times, and then I noticed a change of temperature on my hand. I built a fire and set a careful watch as Don Juan had recommended, observing every detail. Hours went by, and I began to feel very tired and cold. I had gathered quite a pile of dry twigs. I fed the fire and moved closer to it. The vigil was so strenuous and so intense that it exhausted me. I began to nod. I was awakened suddenly by a loud crack. It appeared that the noise, whatever it was, had come from just above my left ear since I was lying on my right side. I sat up, fully awake. My left ear buzzed and was deafened by the proximity and force of the sound. I must have been asleep for only a short while, judging by the amount of dry twigs which were still burning in the fire. I did not hear any other noises, but I remained alert and kept on feeding the fire. The thought crossed my mind that perhaps what woke me up was a gunshot. Perhaps someone was around, watching me, taking shots at me. The thought became very anguishing and created an avalanche of rational fears. I experienced a moment of terrible concern for my safety. I felt the tension in my shoulders and my neck. I moved my head up and down. The bones of my neck made a cracking sound. I still kept looking into the fire, but I did not see anything unusual in it, nor did I hear any noises. After a while, I relaxed quite a bit, and it occurred to me that perhaps Don Juan was at the bottom of all this. I rapidly became convinced that it was so. The thought made me laugh. I had another avalanche of rational conclusions, happy conclusions this time. I thought that Don Juan must have suspected I was going to change my mind about staying in the mountains, or he must have seen me running after him and taken cover in a concealed cave or behind a bush. Then he had followed me, and noticing I had fallen asleep, waked me up by cracking a branch near my ear. I added more twigs to the fire and began to look around in a casual and covert manner to see if I could spot him, even though I knew that if he was hiding around there, I would not be able to discover him. Everything was quite placid. The crickets, the wind roughing the trees on the slopes of the hills surrounding me, the soft, cracking sound of the twigs catching on fire. Sparks flew around, but they were only ordinary sparks. Suddenly, I heard the loud noise of a branch snapping in two. The sound came from my left. I held my breath as I listened with utmost concentration. An instant later, I heard another branch snapping on my right. Then I heard the faint, faraway sound of snapping branches. It was as if someone was stepping on them and making them crack. The sounds were rich and full. They had a lusty quality. They also seemed to be getting closer to where I was. I had a very slow reaction and did not know whether to listen or stand up. I was deliberating what to do when all of a sudden the sound of snapping branches happened all around me. I was engulfed by them so fast that I barely had time to jump to my feet and stomp on the fire. I began to run downhill in the darkness. The thought crossed my mind as I moved through the shrubs that there was no flat land. I kept on trotting and trying to protect my eyes from the bushes. I was halfway down to the bottom of the hill when I felt something behind me, almost touching me. It was not a branch. It was something I intuitively felt was overtaking me. This realization made me freeze. I took off my jacket, bundled it on my stomach, crouched over my legs, and covered my eyes with my hands as Don Juan had prescribed. I kept that position for a short while, and then I realized that everything around me was dead still. There were no sounds of any kind. I became extraordinarily alarmed. The muscles of my stomach contracted and shivered spasmodically. Then I heard another cracking sound. It seemed to have occurred far away, but it was extremely clear and distinct. It happened once more, closer to me. There was an interval of quietness, and then something exploded just above my head. The suddenness of the noise made me jump involuntarily, and I nearly rolled over on my side. It was definitely the sound of a branch being snapped in two. The sound had happened so close that I heard the rustling of the branch leaves as it was being cracked. Next, there was a downpour of crackling explosions. Branches were being snapped with great force all around me. The incongruous thing at that point was my reaction to the whole phenomenon. Instead of being terrified, I was laughing. I sincerely thought I had hit upon the cause of all that was happening. I was convinced that Don Juan was again tricking me. A series of logical conclusions cemented my confidence. I felt elated. I tried to imagine what I would do next if I were Don Juan. The sound of something slurping jolted me out of my mental exercise. I listened attentively. The sound happened again. I could not determine what it was. It sounded like an animal slurping water. It happened again, very close by. It was an almost sensual, exasperating sound of feet slushing in deep mud. Someone seemed to be walking, running, trotting on mud all around me. A logical doubt occurred to me. If Don Juan was doing all that, he had to be running in circles at an incredible speed. The rapidity of the sounds made that alternative impossible. I then thought that Don Juan must have confederates after all. The slushings actually vibrated. In fact, their peculiar vibration seemed to be directed at my stomach, or perhaps I perceived their vibrations through the lower part of my abdomen. That realization brought an instantaneous loss of my sense of objectivity and aloofness. The sounds were attacking my stomach. The question occurred to me, what if it was not Don Juan? Apparently, the phenomenon I was experiencing was not a game, and the another one of Don Juan's tricks theory was only my rude explanation. I had cramps and an overwhelming desire to roll over and straighten my legs. I decided to move to my right in order to get my face off the place where I had gotten sick. The instant I began to crawl, I heard a very soft squeak right above my left ear. I froze on the spot. A flood of squeaks engulfed me at once. Then I heard something like the wings of a big bird sweeping over the tops of the bushes. The flapping wings of a flock of birds seemed to be pulling me up from above, while the squeaks of an army of rats seemed to be pushing me from underneath and from around my body. There was no doubt in my mind that through my blundering stupidity I had unleashed something terrible on myself. I clenched my teeth and took deep breaths and sang peyote songs. The noises lasted a very long time, and I opposed them with all my might. When they subsided, there was again an interrupted silence, as I am accustomed to perceiving silence. That is, I could detect only the natural sounds of the insects and the wind. The time of silence was for me more deleterious than the time of noises. I began to think and to assess my position, and my deliberation threw me into a panic. I knew that I was lost. I did not have the knowledge nor the stamina to fend off whatever was accosting me. I was utterly helpless, crouched over my own vomit. I thought that the end of my life had come, and I began to weep. I wanted to think about my life, but I did not know where to start. Nothing of what I had done in my life was really worthy of that last, ultimate emphasis, so I had nothing to think about. That was an exquisite realization. I had changed since the last time I experienced a similar fright. This time I was more empty. I had less personal feelings to carry along. I asked myself what a warrior would do in that situation, and I arrived at various conclusions. There was something about my umbilical region that was uniquely important. There was something unearthly about the sounds. They were aiming at my stomach, and the idea that Don Juan was tricking me was utterly untenable. The muscles of my stomach were very tight, although I did not have cramps any longer. I kept on singing and breathing deeply, and I felt a soothing warmth inundating my entire body. It had become clear to me that if I was going to survive, I had to proceed in terms of Don Juan's teachings. I repeated his instructions in my mind. I remembered the exact point where the sun had disappeared over the mountains in relation to the hill where I was and to the place where I had crouched. I reoriented myself, and when I was convinced that my assessment of the cardinal points was correct, I began to change my position so I would have my head pointing in a new and better direction, the southeast. I slowly started moving my feet toward my left, inch by inch, until I had them twisted under my calves. Then I began to align my body with my feet. But no sooner had I begun to creep laterally than I felt a peculiar tap. I had the actual physical sensation of something touching the uncovered area of the back of my neck. It happened so fast that I yelled involuntarily and froze again. I tightened my abdominal muscles and began to breathe deeply and sing my peyote songs. A second later, I felt once more the same light tap on my neck. I cringed. My neck was uncovered, and there was nothing I could do to protect myself. I was tapped again. It was a very soft, almost silky object that touched my neck like the furry paw of a giant rabbit. It touched me again, and then it began to cross my neck back and forth until I was in tears. It was not a painful sensation at all, and yet it was maddening. I knew that if I did not involve myself in doing something, I would go mad and stand up and run. So I slowly began again to maneuver my body into a new position. My attempt at moving seemed to increase the tapping on my neck. It finally got to such a frenzy that I jerked my body and at once aligned it in the new direction. I had no idea whatsoever about the outcome of my act. I was just taking action to keep from going stark, raving mad. As soon as I changed directions, the tapping on my neck ceased. After a long, anguished pause, I heard a distant snapping of branches. The noises were not close anymore. The rustling sound and the cracking of branches gave me the feeling that the whole hill was on fire. My body was as tight as a rock. I was perspiring copiously. I began to feel warmer and warmer. For a moment, I was utterly convinced that the hill was burning. I did not jump up and run because I was so numb I was paralyzed. In fact, I could not even open my eyes. All that mattered to me at that point was to get up and escape the fire. I had terrible cramps in my stomach, which started to cut my intake of air. I became very involved in trying to breathe. After a long struggle, I was capable of taking deep breaths again, and I was also capable of noticing that the rustling had subsided. There was only an occasional cracking sound. The snapping sound of branches became more and more distant and sporadic until it ceased altogether. I was able to open my eyes. I looked through my half-closed lids to the ground underneath me. It was already daylight. I waited a while longer without moving, and then I started to stretch my body. I rolled on my back. The sun was over the hills in the east. It took me hours to straighten out my legs and drag myself downhill. I began to walk toward the place where Don Juan had left me, which was perhaps only a mile. I thought of mountain lions and tried to climb up a tree, but my arms could not support my weight. I leaned against a rock and resigned myself to die there. I was convinced that I would be food for mountain lions or other predators. I woke up when something shook me. Don Juan was leaning over me. He said he was taking me to a large stream and was going to wash me there. On the way, he plugged my ears with some leaves he had in his pouch, and then he blindfolded me, putting one leaf on each eye and securing them both with a piece of cloth. Don Juan rubbed my entire body with leaves and then dumped me in a river. I felt it was a large river. It was deep. I was standing and I could not touch the bottom. Don Juan was holding me by the right elbow. On the way to my car, I stayed very close to Don Juan. I stumbled scores of times and he laughed. I noticed that his laughter was especially invigorating and it became the focal point of my replenishing. The more he laughed, the better I felt. The next day, I narrated to Don Juan the sequence of events from the time he left me. He laughed all the way through my account, especially when I told him that I had thought it was one of his tricks. "You always think you're being tricked," he said. "You trust yourself too much. You act like you know all the answers. You know nothing, my little friend. Nothing. Now you must go home. Don't return until you're healed and your gap is closed." I did not return to Mexico for months. I made the last entry in my field notes on October 16, 1970. As I approached Don Juan's house, I saw him sitting in his usual place under his ramada in front of the door. I parked in the shade of a tree, took my briefcase and a bag of groceries out of the car, and walked toward him, greeting him in a loud voice. I then noticed that he was not alone. There was another man sitting behind a high pile of firewood. Both of them were looking at me. Don Juan waved, and so did the other man. Judging from his attire, he was not an Indian, but a Mexican from the Southwest. He was wearing Levi's, a beige shirt, a Texan cowboy hat, and cowboy boots. I talked to Don Juan and then looked at the man. He was smiling at me. I stared at him for a moment. "Here's little Carlos," the man said to Don Juan. "And he doesn't speak to me anymore. Don't tell me that he's cross with me." Before I could say anything, they both broke up laughing, and only then did I realize that the strange man was Don Genaro. "You didn't recognize me, did you?" he asked, still laughing. I had to admit that his attire had baffled me. Don Juan explained to him that I had been away for months because of an unfortunate incident with one of the allies. "So you finally encountered an ally," Don Genaro said. "I think I did," I said cautiously. They laughed loudly. Don Genaro patted me on the back two or three times. It was a very light tapping, which I interpreted as a friendly gesture of concern. He rested his hand on my shoulder as he looked at me, and I had a feeling of placid contentment, which lasted only an instant. For next, Don Genaro did something inexplicable to me. I suddenly felt that he had put the weight of a boulder on my back. I had the sensation that he had increased the weight of his hand, which was resting on my right shoulder, until it made me sag all the way down and I hit my head on the ground. "We must help little Carlos," Don Genaro said, and gave a conspiratorial look to Don Juan. I sat up straight again and turned to Don Juan. "I don't know anything about it," Don Juan said in a comically factual tone. "He didn't put his hand on my shoulder." With that, both of them broke up laughing. "What did you do to me, Don Genaro?" I asked. "I just put my hand on your shoulder," he said innocently. Don Genaro got up, cracked his bones, stretching his arms, and opened his eyes until they were round and looked crazy. "Genaro is going to make the desert tremble," he said, and went into the chaparral. "Genaro is determined to help you," Don Juan said in a confidential tone. "He did the same thing to you at his house, and you almost saw." I thought he was referring to what had happened at the waterfall, but he was talking about some unearthly rumbling sounds I had heard at Don Genaro's house. "That was Genaro's art," he said. "Only Genaro can do that. You almost saw then." I told him that it had never occurred to me to associate seeing with the strange noises I had heard at that time. "And why not?" he asked flatly. "Well, seeing means the eyes to me," I said. He scrutinized me for a moment as if there were something wrong with me. "I never said that seeing is a matter of the eyes alone," he said, and shook his head in disbelief. "Well, how does he do it?" I insisted. "He has already told you how he does it," Don Juan said sharply. At that very moment, I heard an extraordinary rumble. I jumped up and Don Juan began to laugh. The rumble was like a thunderous avalanche. Listening to it, I had the funny realization that my inventory of experiences in sound comes definitely from the movies. Don Juan held his sides as if they hurt from laughing. The thunderous rumble shook the ground where I stood. I distinctly heard the thump of what seemed to be a monumental boulder that was rolling on its sides. I heard a series of crushing thumps that gave me the impression that the boulder was rolling inexorably toward me. I experienced a moment of supreme confusion. My muscles were tense. My whole body was ready for fleeing. I looked at Don Juan. He was staring at me. I then heard the most frightening thump I had ever heard in my life. It was as if a monumental boulder had landed right behind the house. Everything shook, and at that moment I had a most peculiar perception. For an instant, I actually saw a boulder the size of a mountain right behind the house. It was not as if an image had been superimposed on the scenery of the house I was looking at. It was not the view of a real boulder either. It was rather as if the noise was creating the image of a boulder rolling on its monumental sides. I was actually seeing the noise. The inexplicable character of my perception threw me into the depths of despair and confusion. Never in my life would I have conceived that my senses were capable of perceiving in such a manner. I had an attack of rational fright and decided to flee for my life. Don Juan held me by the arm and ordered me imperatively not to run away and not to turn around either, but face the direction in which Don Gennaro had gone.